Good morning and welcome to The Time Machine with Hampton Eagle FM. And this is our, could be our last morning segment for the holidays. Today is the 2nd of January 2026. And well, we're just new in this house called 2026. The whole thing is chronological. It's, nothing magical really happens. Everything will just have to come from your efforts. Unfortunately, that's how reality works. The whole thing is, call it a social construct, because the sun is going to rise and set. And it's been doing so for past 6,000 years or a billion years, depending on whether you are, depending on who you ask, a creationist or an evolutionist. And those two have been engaged in a debate that's as old as time, and frankly, I don't even have energy to participate in. The thing is, they both act like they are 100% sure about what they are talking about, and they are both working with theories, basically. The evolution theory, and also world religion is exactly not very different from that, because 100% of it is just theory. Like this and this and this is just words lumped together to communicate a message. So when I run into people saying, no, this one is right, this one is right, like, so anyone of you guys have the, you know, tangible evidence to prove this instead of just trying to convince me? And none of them actually do that. Someone will bring you, you know, these bones according to the mathematical formula we have used is a million years. Yeah, and now the thing is, both science and religion, in both science and religious literatures, can be wrong. It's not rocket science. They can both be wrong. But these two camps really hold to it like it's, geez, this is, like, yeah, no. I have a spiritual life, and I also have a lot of questions. That's my favorite part. Because, as a comedian, I'm naturally an overthinker. But that's not what we're going to talk about here. Now, what we're going to talk about here is one of the African leaders that I've actually always underlooked. That didn't come out right. Overlooked. Finally. Let's go with over, because under is not a good word. No. Especially as a guy using that word to in reference to another guy, because that's what we're going to be talking about here. Today we're going to be talking about one of the leaders that I've always, almost, actually, I knew the existence of this guy. It was, you know, born in 1924, died in 2003, I think, if I'm not, you know, mixing things up there. But, 1924, now, the gentleman we're going to talk about today is Idi Amin. I was just scrolling through social media, minding my own business, and then I ran into to one content creator. His name, who goes by the name of Lumumba Amin. Now I do a little bit of searching on his different platforms. He's a very well articulated gentleman and pretty smart, and the features were basically proving. The facial features were telling me that I was wasting time with this whole research, because, oh, come on, the resemblance is remarkable. I thought I was the only one who is a carbon copy of my dad. If there are fathers on this planet that don't need DNA, my dad is one of them. All you just have to do is run into both of us in one place and you'll be like, yep, nope, no DNA needed here. You two are father and son. Congratulations, you can go. Now, well, I was gonna give reference to my mom and I needing DNA, but oh, come on. Yeah, right. After 9 months of pregnancy, that's all the DNA you need when it comes to, you know, when it comes to your mom. Your father, on the other hand, that can be a little sketchy. Could be, you know, uncle could be dad, dad could be uncle. That's a lot of actually very controversial things. Now, after I came across Lumumba Amin's profile, I went through a bunch of his videos, and he's this homeboy is articulate to the T. And I came across one of his videos that basically took my attention, where he's trying to point out, where he's pointing out the flaws in democracy. at least not just the yeah, actually democracy as in democracy in general, as in representative governance. And you can look at it from you know, all the way from Athenians, when it was basically founded, the whole idea of democracy, you know, back in ancient Greece, to when it was adopted by, to some degree, by the Romans with your Justinian II, you know, basically codifying the laws that we use today, which is why we call them, you know, Roman Dutch law, because after he codified them, gave them to the Dutch, they decided to go on a colonizing spree, and then we adopted them, and then we decided, you know, that was an excellent way of basically, well, doing things. So, democracy has always been criticized. Socrates and Plato, these guys were alive at the time of the founding of the institution of democracy. They criticized it, especially when it comes to how the leaders come to power. Now, that's the aspect that Mr. Lumumba is actually looking at, that there's something wrong with representative governance. There's a conversation about representative governance, and especially in a way that leaders are chosen to, you know, are chosen to lead. There's something fundamentally flawed. It's not everything that's wrong. It's just fundamentally flawed. And he uses two examples. You know, a school principal and a company's director. But let me not put words in his mouth. I will let him, you know, do the talking. Then from there, we'll start from, after the audio, we'll just start for, go. Actually, let's start with, who was Idi Amin? Now, I've watched a bunch of documentaries and, I've read books, I've watched, heck, movies of Idi Amin. But who was he? Now, the thing is, when it comes to politics, it's kind of a little tricky, because a bunch of literature that I've read on Idi Amin, describing him as a very, call him, you know, well, a dictator is the first word that keeps popping up. He ate human flesh, and he was just one diabolical decision after another for eight or nine years of his rule. The thing, yeah, because he was in office from 1971 to his overthrow in 1979. This is the former president or former dictator of Uganda, depending on which direction that you want to go. Now, Idi Amin, Dada, it turns out he was a huge fan of Hitler. Now, before deciding to become a politician, he decided, you know what, I'm going to join the army. But this whole fighting thing is just not mine. Let me see what I can do. Bro decided, of all the things that you can major in the military discipline, I was like, you know what? I think Idi Amin and I would have been friends if we were born in the same time period, because he really liked food. Because when he joined the army, he was like, you know what? I'm just gonna go there and cook for him. This whole fighting thing, I don't know. I'm just not for this whole bullets thing. But, cooking, sure. Cooking I can do. But fighting, no, thank you. Now, let's just gloss through Idi Amin's time frame. Bibliography. Oh, it's biography. Biography, yes. Bibliography, Idi Amin, born 1924/1925 in Koboko, Uganda, died in August 16, 2003. Really? I say, every time I read the stories of these guys, I think maybe they lived somewhere before Christ and died shortly before Christ was born. It is just fairly recent. Homeboy died in 2003. He died in Jeddah, Saudi Arabia, and he's described as he was a military officer who just could his predecessor and then became a president. And then was a president from 1971 to 1979, president of Uganda, whose regime was noted for the sheer scale of its brutality. That's Encyclopedia Britannica. Now, if you look at how narrative. Narrative is very important, guys. Information is everything. And to quote my favorite, quote from Amy Goodman, information is the oxygen for democracy. Speaking of democracy, we'll be with you shortly. Now, Idi Amin was a member of a small member of a small Kakwa ethnic group. It's one of the ethnic groups, you know, the small ethnic groups in Uganda, in the northwestern of Uganda. Amin's little formal education, Idi Amin had little formal education and joined the King's African Rifle of the British Colonial Army. And this made me scream in the middle of the night reading this stuff. You think my landlord thought I was with someone in there? Because the 21st century is, you never really know, because, it's understandable. I was alone, I swear. And I was just pissed off by history that I was reading. I didn't come out of the closet. Actually, I've never been in the closet. My love for boobs gave me that, you know, even if I pretended to... You know, one thing I like about ladies, as they find out you are gay, they feel like they become very comfortable around you, to the point where they start, you know, changing their clothes in front of you. I mean, I think facial expression, I can pull that off. The problem is that guy downstairs, that one is Judas, betrayer, just ruin everything. But anyway, a member of a small group now, I mean, had little formal education. Now, he joined the army. The part that made me say, you know, that made me scream in the middle of the night was that, he joined the King's Africa, the African Rifle of the British Colonial Army in 1946 as an assistant cook. Now, one of the things that he participated in militarily as a black African leader to be he quickly rose through ranks and he served in the British action against the Mau Mau revolt in Kenya. You know that Mau Mau resistance, one of the idiots that actually went there to, you know, to torture and do all kinds of despicable things to those Mau Mau, Kenyan citizens that basically stood up because they were being oppressed, was one of their own. Have you seen the videos of Patrice Lumumba being chased around and being kicked down, being chased? The people that were doing the chasing? Black. I know when it comes to these things, we are very good at pointing fingers to white people. But a lot of us are not actually ready to have a conversation of what is going on in our house first. Because that's where we have the biggest problem. It's inside the house. Intruders are coming in because they are not breaking the door. That's what we initially, at least some of us initially thought. These intruders are not breaking the door. Someone from inside the house keeps opening the door. Or in case of colonialism, the window. Someone from inside. That's how coups work. That's how coups work. There's always an assistance from someone inside. Thomas Sankara, Blaise Compaoré, best friend, slash right-hand man, 1973, Savre Yende. He's a right-hand man. I swear. It's always one of your own. Man. Even in power, it's always one of your own. Don't look far when you are, although to be fair, for those of us that are Christians, we have an excellent biblical reference that speaks to that. It wasn't a random stranger that, told the Pharisees, yo, homies, that's Jesus. It was just one of them. To be fair, Judas was just an opportunist, so, you know, he was business minded. He just looked at our Lord and said, he just took a look at our Lord and Savior and went like, I've been looking for startup capital for my business. And everyone is looking for this guy. How do we say that these days? We say, it's nothing personal, it's just business. Guys, if you are swindling someone, and you say it's nothing personal, It's just business. You have to understand that if you were on their, if they were saying that to you, you'd take it personal. You only say it's nothing personal. It's just business if you are not at the receiving end. But if you are on the receiving end, it's going to be personal. That's how betrayal works. It's always going to be personal. So back to Idi Amin. Now, this guy was this close to being my favorite until I found out he's one of the guys that actually stomped down the uprising of the Mau Mau in Kenya. He was assisting the British colonize his own people. John Bethel Bokassa, my favorite Central African Republic, fought for the French. He was Indochina Wars. This is the guy whose country was under occupation, and he assisted the people that were occupying his country to go and occupy another country. When it comes to people and the terrible decisions we make, it has nothing to do with skin color. It's always about gold. What's in it for me? A white person without a moment's notice will betray his fellow white people if you give him enough money. And that statement pretty much describes every Western politician right now. Actually, about 90% of them. American politicians are more subservient to Israel than they are to Americans. If you ask yourself why, easy. It's called Jeffrey Epstein. One thing I've learned from Whitney Webb's One Nation Under Blackmail is that, if you want someone to listen to every command you give them, just blackmail the heck out of them. Works like a charm. Now, the thing is, one of the reasons I actually believe Whitney Webb's One Nation Under Blackmail, that a lot of Western, if not global politicians, are actually, making a lot of decisions under coercion, is because of FIFA's decision. Now, at this point, you're asking yourself, what does this have to do with this whole, world with politics? It's simple. It's very simple. It's not rocket science. Back in 2022, when the war between Russia and Ukraine started, FIFA was quick to say the following. Football is fully united here and in full solidarity with all the people affected in Ukraine. Both presidents of FIFA and UEFA hope that the situation in Ukraine will improve significantly and rapidly so that football can again be a vector for the unity and peace among its people. Now, this was FIFA and UEFA, when they suspended Russian clubs and national teams from all competitions. Fast forward to 2025, Israel is just bombing Gaza to smithereens. Well, they've been doing it from 1948. But this is the worst, the worst for Palestinians, but the best they have done. Now, what was FIFA's response? Because a lot of sports enthusiasts and a lot of people that actually read history, even the one that took place in 2022, started going, now, you know what? When you invade a country, we ban you from our favorite, sport codes. And FIFA and UEFA, especially FIFA president said, and I quote, this was the BBC, by the way, not me quoting. FIFA president Gianni Infantino says world football, when they were asked that, since we banned Russia from all these sport codes that are under your control, Israel is doing the exact same thing. Throw on that the caveat of shooting pretty much every journalist that tries to report on them. And blackmailing every ICC prosecutor that tries to investigate them. Using sometimes You know, one of their own, again, Kabila Jr. and the former ICC prosecutor, Fada Bensouda of the Gambia. It's always one of your own, I swear. Jeez. But anyway, the president of FIFA, in response to people calling the sports, you know, the sports, the football body to ban Israel out of, out of world sports. His response was, the football body in the football's governing body, aka FIFA, cannot solve geopolitical problems. What? So it can solve geopolitical problems when it comes to Russia and Ukraine, but it cannot solve geopolitical problems when it comes to Gaza and Israel. Can I have some of those Epstein files? Because I have a sneaky suspicion he ended. And then you push the, Israel, Iran bombing the heck out of each other. Their nuclear, their different nuclear programs. The International Atomic Energy Agency will do anything to gain access to Iran's nuclear programs. And will do absolutely nothing to even ask a question of, Israel, do you have any nuclear weapons? Because not developing, do you have? No one from the International Energy Agency will even ask that question. Yeah. I mean, I look at that and go like, because look, a lot of people look at that and go like, these politicians are really dumb. I'm like, no, you're not fooling me. They're not dumb. Those guys are really smart. They're really smart. The only reason, and also, I mean, you could say they are young, but have you seen the gray hair? But the thing is, now when you look at it, I can't reach any reasonable conclusion, but the Epstein files are hard at work. Boy, are they doing overtime. Even Trump, who said, if you vote for me, I will release those files. And then came, you know, videos came out of him chilling with Jeffrey Epstein and went like, ooh, sorry, I forgot that he was my homie. You know, I look at that and go like, Whitney Webb? Do I 100% believe you? No. But do I 90-something percent believe you? Absolutely. 90% of the politicians in the world are making decisions they are making, especially those ones that are against their own people, because of those files. Those files are working hard. They are working overtime. And I can only imagine how diabolical they are, because if a fully grown person is risking lying to their own people. What honorable at this point, point of correction, dishonorable at this point, what were you doing in those videos or those pictures? Because it must have been diabolical, diabolical to the core. And anyway, back to Idi Amin. Now, Idi Amin. Now, Amin was one of the few Ugandan soldiers elevated to officer rank before, well after saving the people that are oppressing you to oppress, to help them oppress, your own people. I mean, you'll totally understand why they will give you a rank. So, Idi Amin became one of the few Ugandan soldiers elevated to officer rank before Uganda's independence in 1962. And then he became closely associated with the new nation's prime minister, President Milton Obote, who, guess what? Was overthrown. Now, this Milton Obote guy was an interesting character. He's the only president I know right now who was overthrown twice. Overthrown the first time, came to office, and he was overthrown again, and he was overthrown the first time, okay, came to office, overthrown, and then he came back to office again, and he was overthrown again. Like, guys, seriously, dude, read the room. You are not needed here. That's what the messages should have been clear. The signs were everywhere. Homeboy, you are not wanted. You are not wanted here. Don't stop coming back. So, Idi Amin. Oh no, we are on Obote. Obote also is a very interesting character. Now, who was Obote? Now, Milton Obote was born in December 28, 1924, and died in 2005. and was a significant Ugandan politician who served as prime minister from 1962-1970 and twice as president. There's a reason why twice as president, because he kept coming back to office and he kept being overthrown. But homeboy understood the phrase, motto, spirit no surrender, he took it a little too serious. How did Milton Obote come to power? Well, simple. Milton Obote, Elango prime minister of Uganda in April 1962, heading the Ugandan People's Congress, UPC party. Now, the UPC claimed support through the throughout Uganda except for Buganda. That's another tribal group they have. To achieve this, Obote accepted the constitution granting Buganda federal status and then forming the alliance with the Uganda establishment. Now, together with the UPC and the Kakaba Yeka KY, that's political parties, formed a government with Obote as prime minister. Now, in 1966, after tension grew between Obote and Buganda, Obote sent troops to arrest the Kabaka who then fled to England. Of course, after he was thrown, he ran to Saudi Arabia. That explains Obote then imposed a new constitution, appointed himself as executive president, and abolished all kingdoms. No kidding,
really.
Now, why am I saying that bro was using spirit no surrender as a motivation for coming back to power? Obote served as a president twice. The first time, his first term began in 1966 and ended in 1971 after a military coup. And then, gonna guess who was responsible for that. Cool. It ended in 1971. So this is the time when Idi Amin now takes over. And then Idi Amin runs the country from 1971 to 1979. And he's behind, was called out of office. He runs to Saudi Arabia. And guess who walks into office? Milton Obote, ladies and gentlemen. Put your hands together for Milton Obote for his second time. And now this time you can imagine the promises he made. This was in 1971. This was in 1979, after the overthrow of Idi Amin. Now, Obote regained the presidency in December 1980, following a controversial election, and was later overthrown in 1985. So let me get this straight. This Obote guy becomes president. And then in 1971, Idi Amin, a military officer, Obote becomes president. Obote becomes president in 1966. And one of the military officers in his country under his presidency is Idi Amin, who then looks at the presidency and go like, that should have been me. I wonder what I can do. Oh, look. How did he get power again? He overthrew... okay, you know what? Yeah. I'm going to overthrow this guy. 1971, Obote gets overthrown. Idi Amin becomes president. And... at this point... with Idi Amin's reputation as a dictator, you can imagine one of the things that dictators do is that they knight of long knife their competitors. Any opposition that stands up, they kill it literally and figuratively. They kill the movement and the poor guy running the movement if they catch him. Now, Idi Amin runs Uganda with an iron fist. So they say. While running Uganda with an iron fist, it turns out Bro Obote was cooking his return. The return of Fu Manchu, if you have seen that movie. Now, this, fast forward to 1979, Mr. Obote decided to go for, you know what, I'm going to claim, to reclaim what is mine. Got there? Reclaimed it? Kicks Idi Amin out of power and takes over power. And then he is like, you know what? I think I've taken all precautions to make sure that I'm never, you know, I don't go through the same, you know, the same painful situation I went through last time of being overthrown. Right. I think I've sealed every hole. 1985, Homeboy is getting overthrown. I'm like, oh, come on. And like at this point, you can totally understand why he decided, you know what? I know they say spirit no surrender, but I think I'll just surrender. Now, let's come back to, Idi Amin Jr. Let's come to Idi Amin Jr. Power is not your friend, guys. I don't care how good of friends you two are. Power will test you to the core. Because I swear, every time you read the story of a government overthrow, the guy that gets overthrown and the guy that takes over after that overthrow were very close, either friends, childhood friends in terms of Blaise Compaoré and Thomas Sankara, or they trust each other as servicemen. It turns out Power, not your friend. There's an interesting story about that, about the Russian president, current Russian president, and one of his most trusted handmen. I don't know how he pulled it off, because the Russian, Putin was president first, and then when he stepped out of office, as president to become prime minister, I believe, he hands the presidential office to one of his trusted handmen who leads the country until the next election cycle. And then Putin takes over power again. Every time I read that story, I go like, ha! How many of us have friends like that? Like, seriously, do you have, like, if you became a president today, do you have that friend that you trust so much that you will give them power and you trust them to give it back 5 years later? Because knowing my friends, I don't know if I can pull that off. Yeah. Must be a Russian thing. Because in Africa, there's a lot of evidence suggesting otherwise. It's either what those two have is so much friendship, or he was told, if you don't give me back this power, I'm gonna do something you're not gonna like. Because if it's just pure friendship, that's friendship on a whole another level. That's one question. Do you have a friend you trust that much? Yes, I surely don't. Sorry, guys, we really have to point out the obvious here, because you are. Now, moving on. Oh, yeah, we're going to take a listen to an audio of Lumumba Amin, the son of Idi Amin. Now, This is something that is, you know, I just take this with a pinch of salt. This is something that I got off of social media. And, you know, the man is, you know, well, is a legitimate content creator, and he just gives analysis on pretty much everything political, especially things that's, you know, geopolitical and things that's, things that are taking place in Uganda. And he's very good at it. But don't take my words for it. Now, in this audio, he's asking one question. And that question is about democracy. Like, especially the aspects of democracy that has to do with, you know, that deals with representative governance and in a sense of how governments come to power. Like how the representatives are chosen. That process is the one that has been questioned all throughout history, really, from the beginning of the institution of democracy. In ancient Greece, a lot of philosophers, renowned philosophers have questioned that aspect. I'm talking about elections. It turns out, well, there's something fundamentally flawed about elections. But before I get to Plato and Socrates, Plato, Socrates, and Aristotle, these are three most world-renowned Greek philosophers. But let's take a listen to the questions about democracy, especially when it comes to things like elections, that Lumumba Amin is asking. Like, what is why is this one of those fundamental flaws of democracy? Please take a listen. The Time Machine with Helmet on Eagle FM.
If you're looking for a headmaster to run a primary school, you can't ask the pupils in that school or their parents to choose who will be the next headmaster. They just don't know what qualifications and experience a good headmaster should have. The same goes for companies. You cannot ask the workers of a company or the company's customers to choose the next director. Now imagine how incompetent the same people are in choosing the president of the republic. What does the population of a poor developing nation know about the qualifications, competencies, and professional experience of a president? Nothing. And it is idiotic for Western democracy to assume that the people do know. Today in Africa, for example, many people vote for an individual based on tribe, religion, or who is bribing voters with handouts, or whose campaign is the most entertaining. Is the African context serving the purpose of this human resource process? Not really. Don't forget that democracy is primarily a human resource process for leadership jobs. Therefore, pragmatically addressing the structural failures of Western democracy in the context of developing nations especially is as much an economic development decision, a national security concern, as well as a foreign policy issue and a national stability priority. If a public school or private corporation requires human resource experts to choose a mere CEO, why is the post of President of the Republic left entirely to a poorly educated population?
I said it was going to be controversial. And he's not the first one to reach that conclusion, that there's something fundamentally flawed in, you know, in a way that leaders are chosen in the so-called democratic countries. Now, he's not the first one to point out, to point that out. But one thing that, you know, the two examples that he used, example number one, when it comes to choosing a principal for a school, even if it's a primary, heck, kindergarten school, if you are choosing a principal, you don't leave it up to the parents to come and vote. Now, who do you guys think should be? Have you guys heard of a school that just said, you know what? We need of a new principal. So what we need here is for you parents and students come together and look at all these teachers. They will all give you their manifestos and they will present their campaigns. And then based on that, we will vote on who is best qualified to run the school. No. There is a serious screening process by qualified ministry HRs that is conducted before the right candidate is chosen. Through, obviously, applications, interviews, and all those things, there is a lot of, there's a specific vetting process that has specific requirements. There's something specific that they are looking for. Now, company directors, for example, company directors, do employees or customers, take for example, First Rent Group, you know, decided, you know what, in one of our subsidiaries in your country, they came from South Africa. I say, First Rent Group representatives came from South Africa. They come to Namibia and they start running a campaign of, we want the next, director. Any type of director, we want a director to run Namibia's it's FNB, it's a subsidiary of First Rent Group. We're looking for a director for one of our subsidiaries. So, can you guys now? These are the candidates we have. You guys must. These guys are going to give you their manifesto. They are going to present, and then based on their presentation and manifestos, then you can vote who will best run this bank.
When you choose UNAM,
you get credible accreditations.
You get internationally recognized qualifications.
You get a university with a growing reputation.
When you choose UNAM,
you get a head start on local jobs.
You become connected in a growing Namibia.
You stay in the best country in the world.
Because you already know, you love it here.
Open your mind to UNAM.
And UNAM will open the world to you.
UNAM is your university, Namibia.
Because the you in UNAM is you.
Lipura nenge no wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweko dite opoye ekukulile. Oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo iheo etike kovano hile koshiwala. Onongeshe fa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota enjuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa. Nune udo otukwetira o special angeta shake ngeshe fa omarudi dayo loka. Opone ushendi fenawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa. Ninge kwa tafanona Monica ko Eagle FM. Onora esatu imwe bali heavy nola natu heali bali no heali. Ile kumberewa, mura hetatu natu, bali o hetatu watatu, o mafilane, Eagle FM, the eye.
And welcome back. So, where was I? First Rent Group example. So, they come to Namibia and they present a group of, a group of ladies and gentlemen, and then they tell us that we, the clients, that you clients, and for all of you that have bank accounts with FNB, we want you, the employees of FNB, we want you guys to come together and help us. Because it's your money that's in these bank accounts. Now, it's your right to choose the right leader to manage your money. First of all, thank heavens we don't do that. Second, how many of us even know the job description of a director in a financial institution? You know, when I said this was going to be controversial, I wasn't joking. Because it's concerning. It's hilariously funny on a technical level. But that's the problem with most of my jokes. They are too technical. A lot of people want jokes off. I met a girl at the bar. I was doing it in the bathroom. What type of nonsense is that? No. Now, the argument he tries to make, which have been made for a past, I don't know, like a gazillion years, especially with regards to democracy and how leaders come to power in a democratic system, is that the vetting process is not rigid enough. It's not strong enough. The vetting process is not strong enough. Because if you have a group of qualified, call it vetters, to vet a principal to run a school, and you need a group of qualified, again call them vetters, to vet someone who is qualified enough to run a financial institution. Why is that? The voting or more like the vetting process of someone who is going to run any entire country is left to people that are making that decision based on, I think we are from the same tribe, I better vote him. Like, I swear that's when everything becomes, made me go like, people vote a candidate based on a lot of things that have nothing to do with, take a president or a councillor, for example. A lot of people vote for a councillor, a lot of people vote for a councillor without even knowing what the job description of a councillor is. So, by that fact, or if you wanna go Latin or French, ipso facto, you can easily see why it's very easy to criticize. Now, at this point, you're asking yourself one question. Should we just do what other countries do, like different constituencies, they vote for councillors, and then those councillors, vote for parliamentarians, and then parliamentarians vote for president? It's compartmentalized. I like it, but now you have to understand that when it comes to governance, the governing systems themselves are not the problem primarily. The biggest problem you have are the two-legged, 32-teethed idiots that runs the systems. We are the problem in pretty much everything. We are the problem. There's nothing wrong with capitalism. There's everything wrong with hedge fund firms. What do they call this? A vulture capitalism is the word that I was looking for. Everything can be used to do evil. Everything. A knife is one of those things that I always find fascinating. Take a knife, you put it in the hands of a chef, you have a meal. You put it in the hands of a genocidal maniac, you have a body count. Like a literal body count, not the bedroom one. Clean your mind. Jeez. Why is this, why am I talking about this? Because, well, this is not the first time these questions have been asked about democracy. This has been going on for a while. And different people have different, point of views. Now, when it comes to, I think it's important there's one mistake that we people make every time that we are in favor of a system. We stop questioning it. Not only do we stop questioning it, no, we also, try to fight everyone that tries to question it. Questioning power is how change happens. It was an industrial revolution. Industrial revolution formed labor unions. When the industrial revolution emerged, a lot of industry owners, because they did not have regulations that were guiding them, like through how to, established a clear legal, roles to play between an employer and employee. Because now we have a clear cut roles of what is legally required for an employer to play and what's legally required for an employee to play. Providing a safe working environment. Not just by providing working equipment, but also by making sure that, it's sexual predator free by firing every idiot that sexually assaults or, does something inappropriate to the other employee. That's the employer's responsibility. The employee's responsibility show up on time and then execute the tasks given to them by the employer. So that's just one of them. Now, there is a clear cut, but before the establishment of these clear cut rules when it comes to the roles that the employer and the employer and the employee should play in a complementary of each other, in I give you my service, you give me money at the end of the month, thank you very much, boss. Before labor unions became a thing, a lot of industry owners were just taking advantage of people. Kids worked in mines. They died of lung-related problems. And you know what? These industry owners, as long as they were making money, they didn't care because, for one, it wasn't their kids dying. So, believe it or not, human beings are so selfish, laws had to be passed to make it illegal for people to recruit kids to work for them in dangerous environments like mine shafts. This was long before the invention of open pit mines. This was tunnel mining. And more often, tunnels collapsed. People didn't care as long as they were making money. For them, it was just occupational hazard. Yeah. That's who we are. That's why I said, how to put this the Taylor Swift way. Yes, we are the problem. It's us. It's us. Now, moving on. I have an interesting, Psychology Today is one of those sources that took me back to ancient Athenian Greece. You can see it's a wonderful sunset. We are on an agora, aka market. An agora is the equivalent of, a stop and shop, but in ancient Greece. Now, when it comes to Plato on democracy, let's start with Plato, and then we can go to Socrates. Was the first one to ask those questions? Oh no, he wasn't. The people that lived during the implementation, during the birth of the democracy as an institution, came up with that. We started criticizing the system. Let's start with Plato. Now, in one of Plato's book, this is one of my favorite story. Get your popcorns if you're one of those Greek mythological lovers, because there's a very nice allegory that describes why human beings, human beings are the problem. There's nothing wrong with capitalism, communism, socialism, and there's nothing wrong with democracy. It's people. The thing is, whatever system you design, you can get rid of democracy today and come up with a whole new system that supersedes democracy. We'll still find ways to oppress each other using that very system. We came up with a system of checks and balances. The three branches of the government, judiciary, legislative, and executive branch. We came up with that, and we have that system here. And not just that, we decided to come up with also bicameral parliament system, where it's split into two, the upper house, the national council, and the lower house, the national assembly. All this is to make sure that power is not concentrated in the hands of one person or one group. Because when it comes to power, when the power is concentrated in the hands of one person, that's equally to, it's not very different from power being concentrated in the hands of one group. The results are the same. 10-key tyranny. And it's always one of you. The biggest backstabber that's going to happen in your life is going to be that closest to you. And it's not rocket science. If you look at the Age of Ultron, for example, Avengers. What did Ultron first realize when Ultron was fired up online? Because Ultron's role was to was a software designed to protect mankind from all threats when Ultron came online and realized that the biggest threat to mankind was mankind himself. So the biggest threat to us is us. We kill each other more than other species kill us. Jeez. Now, let's go to Plato now. In one of that Psychology Today, in one of Plato's book, the philosopher of Protagoras, always struggle to pronounce that name, Protagoras, tells a Genesis story. Genesis is a fancy way of saying beginning. Exodus is a fancy way of saying exiting. I swear, languages have changed. And you can see this in the, you know, in the, you know, in biblical reference, because Genesis is the first book of the Bible. And Exodus tells us a lot of stories about mostly the children of Israel leaving Egypt where they're oppressed. And whether or not that's today's Israel is there's a different day Israel, that's, don't have time to get into that. All I know is that modern Israel has a lot of Polish names. That's my favorite part. Let's take a commercial break. Then we can get into what is my favorite allegory in today's The Time Machine with Helmut.
Omarandisiro wehira kamwaha. Yanje ombango batule bana mibyo tukondwa tokolo mbanda. Inga omachivisiro omana hepero chinene okula ko ministry otutungo no bikunwa omibano matuni no wehi. Alikane pulatene na wa numuhana sane ombulenji kune poetu nduroye obarara nganda no mapanga. Omenarashike, omenarakusha omahiwo kolombanda mo Namibia, omahiwo holo mende nukaye sakurandisiwa munga mwa omano auhe. Okukara no rupa munga mwa omangulilo ngasha manomarandisiro po omarandiro wa mahi ochina chichiri penje oveta. Oveta yomatuni wa mahiwo kolombanda, oveta oisha tano yombula inji onayewali nambali, Ishara oukahu onga nolonjito ohamukua na indo. Omberero yomarandisiro mahi penje oveta. Olomberero lokochi veta, ovakatuke oveta mapea abehunga mwa iyo olomberero lokufuta ochimariva po omberero yokukara mondeko. Ondombero yongaro ombwa yoshiwana. Okurandisa po okuranda ehiro kolombanda malire ochinachima chitwara kolonjaka halo mahi nombameno mokatiko biwana vyetu. Muhepa okushua shike, ehiro kolombanda ehiretu atuhe, oro omahaneno woburo yetu, jimaiso kuyeta ombwiro komundu auhe. Okutida obiruma twa yetu, kehiro mwano wakutenga ehiretu rokolombanda, etemonao tuyanja ondenge rokondenguyo mbalu yetu, nokushevera olondendera detu. Chivisa obishitwa vyo penji oveta. Chuno mahaka wangamwa omangulido wa penji oveta, alikana chivisa omahakango kuhona pare ombalu, ochirata shomahi wakamuha, po kombero ya ministri njiri popedu noruko ndwaroye. Katungule pamwe, okushevera olongulo letu lokolo mbanda mena tolontito na la muhuka. O ministri kaina kukara no mediria wangamwa ombanjarero yolongulo lehi, duma letra iyo marandisiru wa mahi wakolo mbanda penji oveta. Lemburu kakusha, kehiro kolo mbanda ochina ochihule, gaturi tide kehiongaro ombwa, Nunji nongulikiro kubandu abehe. Okuhepa koma unguliru wakumwe. Obude yorati yonji. Yadikamisi wapamwe no batu yoshimariwa okulako horomende ya Namibia. No horomende yehiro bando ishi. Okupitira mombanga yomekulisiro yehiro bando ishi. Konjivisiro yoko mulungu. Alikana hakaena kweno mbero yorupa roma unguliru wakumwe. Kweno shiwana mo ministri yotutu ngono yikunwa. Omeba no matuni no wahi. Po kongole no mora inji. Onora ohambo umwe oimwe. Ombali onora ohambo ndatu ohambo mbali ohambo umwe ombali nomunyo.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any of its staff. Ngelo wapombwa eva tere uliko ni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweko tete
ofo. And welcome back. So we continue. So with my favorite story over why we human beings are the problem. And you know what's my favorite part? We human beings are the ones that are constantly arguing, socialism is the best, capitalism is the best, communism is the best. They are all the best. Because capitalist proponents will say, socialism and communism, capitalism is the best. Socialism, communism, everything else is the worst. And communism proponents will say communism is the best, capitalism and everything else are the worst. Well, here's the thing. I think there is nothing wrong with all those governing systems. There is everything wrong with us. Every system that we are going to, even if we came up with a new one today, there would be something wrong with it. It's us, guys. It's us. Now, one thing I like about, Greek mythology is how it encapsulates. Sorry, I got that from pragmatic, very verbosity that was Lumumba Amin used. Rooted in fact. That's, could have just said, factually speaking. You can just say factually speaking. They are pragmatic. You know, if you went to a government school, you say factually speaking. But if you say, or considering the facts or looking at the facts. But if you went to private school, you just have to say pragmatically. Really? Now, in one of Plato's book, Protagoras tells a Genesis story. Once upon a time, this is going to sound like bedtime. That's actually my, can't wait to, to tuck my kids to sleep. Starting with it. Once upon a time, knowing that I'm going to be yelled at when I get to them. You'll have ruined marriage. Now, once upon a time, the gods molded animals by blending earth with fire and asked Prometheus and his brother Epimetheus to equip each animal with its proper qualities, taking care to prevent extinction of any animal. Epimetheus assigned strength to some, quickness to others, wings, claws, hoofs, pelts, and hides. But by the time he got around to human beings, he had nothing left to give. Finding human beings naked and unarmed, Prometheus gave them fire and the mechanical arts, aka the creativity to make tools like your knives, your AI, your seats, your chairs, and everything. So those are the two things that were given because, well, the guy that was just running around giving all these powers got to us and we were last in the queue and he didn't have anything. It was like, okay, you know what? You can just take this. Now, Prometheus stole that from the gods Athena and Hephaestus. Unfortunately, Prometheus did not give them political wisdom, and so they lived in scattered isolations at the mercy of wild animals. Each time they tried to come together for safety, they treated one another so badly that they once again dispersed. Have you read the history of colonialism? Every time different tribes, different religious groups, different skin color groups come together, their first instinct is to oppress each other. Again, minus the Chinese, because I've read Zheng He's expeditions. All he did was just exchanging gifts and cultural knowledge. Until the emperor was like, no, that's too difficult. I mean, that's too expensive. Because he had a whole armada and he was very good at what he did. Would he have turned into a genocidal colonial maniac? I don't know. I know he's a... And I give him the benefit of the doubt. Now, as human beings shared in divine nature, they gave worship to God Zeus, the chief of gods, took pity on them and asked his messenger Hermes, aka Mercury, if you've been in Roman mythology, to send them reverence and justice. Hermes asked Zeus how he should distribute these virtues and should give them. As for the arts, to a favored few only, or should he give them all? To all, Zeus said, I should like all to have a share, for cities, For cities cannot exist if a few share in the virtue, as in the arts, and further make a law by the order that who has no part in reverence and justice shall be put to death. That's Zeus talking, by the way, the supreme god of Mount Olympia, of Mount Olympus, where you get Olympia. And for he is a pledge to the state. Now, I want to tell you to take this guy's wisdom, because he's the gods on Mount Olympus, But let me just remind you that, you know, look, Zeus was a very good leader. And, like most leaders, he had his own flaws, especially the bisexual immorality, because his first wife was his sister, who he first, well, raped, then tried to bury the embarrassment by marrying her. Jeez. Oh my God, I just forced myself on my sister. How do we get rid? How do we prevent this embarrassment from, how do we remove this embarrassment from the family? I think you two should get married. What the behind? Now, take the brother to jail. Are you kidding me? Let's just let them get married. You know what's the problem? You have a lot of that taking place in society today. As when you look at the subject of child marriage, every time that someone who shouldn't be sleeping with school kids find themselves impregnating one, the parents come in, and out of the kindness of their hearts, I'm sure, lack of knowledge, or combination of both, what do they decide? You know, it's extortion. It's extortion. Because if you are told, you know what, look at this. If I go to jail, no one is going to take care of the child and the mother. 90% of the time, these guys are lying. They are just using that as a literal get out of jail free card. Because after that, they barely send maintenance until they are threatened. And sometimes when this information comes out and, the police are not going to come and go and beg you to come and report a case. The same thing happens for domestic violence. I refuse to believe that, couples just wake up one day and then just, kill each other. No. There were signs. First, it starts with derogatory words, goes to insults, and then pushing, and then a slap, goes to a punch, you get to a panga. Unless you have someone who is running a very, 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 very short fuse. And those are very rare occasions. But I think the majority of the cases, the signs are there. Which I think is, you know, is even more painful for the families, because the question you can't help but asking yourself is, she could have just left. It's painful, but it's not like death is the ultimate pain. Because not only does it hurt you, it hurts those around you. That's when I decide to go for psychological. So, look, democracy thing, especially when it comes to voting people in power, is that first of all, no system is impeccable. Okay, systems are impeccable, but it's not a war. They're pulses. That means there are gaps in those pulses. After the death of his uncle Critias, the first and the worst of the of the 30, Plato once again completed a career in politics. You know, he was the big guy, the brains, you know, the one of the brains in ancient Greece. Now, at first, the restraint and moderation of the restored democracy led him to believe that he could find his place in the in the Athenian assembly, aka call it a parliament. But the trial and death of his friend and teacher Socrates put paid to any fragile illusion. He just decided to, because Socrates inspired Plato. I think Socrates inspired Plato, and Plato inspired Aristotle. Yeah. Or was it Aristotle, Socrates, and yeah? After the death of Socrates, Plato just decided to take up the legal, you know, the more like the technical questioning of the whole democratic system, and they are looking at it from Socrates argues it from an interesting point that if you are going to get people to vote, you know, to participate in something as important as voting, because a lot of us don't understand how important voting is. One wrong person in the executive office, you have a dictator on your hands. And they are killing everyone that questions their authority. They are overhauling the constitution. They are remodeling the White House. Sorry, Trump. They are remodeling them. That's where I think a lot of us also don't understand, like, how important it is. Like, on a presidential and national council and regional, constituency elections. We have spent, between last year and this year, we have spent literally millions on voters' education. You can look at that and say this is a waste of money, but you have to understand that for people to participate in this institution called democracy on a level of voting for who is going to run them, they first have to know what these people, you know, what they are voting for. Not just from a manifesto. They must know how to read a manifesto. Because a manifesto is like a proposal. Basically, it's literally a proposal. You can lie through your teeth, and everyone doesn't believe you for some reason. Which is why a lot of people vote based on skin color. They vote based on tribal identities. I like this one. I'm not going to vote for that one. I know he has very good plans. He shows a lot of potential of, you know, in terms of leadership. But I'm just not going to vote for him because he's from a different tribe. If that's the reason why you are voting, hey, I have bad news for you. You're a terrible voter. And then you have the political, you know, the political aspect of it. Yo, people are reverent. I was born in this party and I will die in this party type of mentality. And well, to each their own, but if you look at it from, if you look at it from a leadership standpoint, what you should be looking at is which one of these is more qualified, not which one of them is from my tribe or from my race or goes to my church or from my family. Okay, maybe from my family can be excused, because once they find themselves in office, you know, I will be one of those guys, people that have the privilege of knowing a guy, you know, who knows a guy, who knows a guy, who knows a guy. 0832888401, please. Before I get carried away, because once I dive into Socrates, this is going far and wide. Now, Socrates on democracy. Socrates had his own questions on democracy. While he valued democratic ideas that come with democracy, like freedom of speech, and the equal participation in citizens, especially when it comes to voting, who is going to be their next leader, he also recognized some weaknesses in how it was practiced in Athens. Specifically, Socrates worried that most citizens lacked the knowledge and wisdom to make informed public policy and government's decisions. And that's true. I'm not a lawmaker. Just based on the information I have gathered from working here and basically reading a bunch of parliamentary stuff, I have a conversation with my friends on this subject. And they look at me like I'm they look at me like I'm Peya Mushelenga. You know, the guy with more degrees than the Namibian population. You think he's listening? Anyway. Again, this statement here is, resonates with what Lumumba basically pointed out. That if you need qualified, if you need a strict qualified participators and a very strict, vetting process to select a principal to run a school, and you need qualified and very strict, qualified people and very strict vetting process, to vote for a person that's going to run a company. What makes you think someone who cannot even spell the word vote should participate in voting as soon as they turn 18? Again, I'm not saying don't vote. All I'm saying is now you know why voters education is that important, because it's actually, a voters education for me addresses the fundamental flaw in democracy itself. And the fundamental flaw is that you cannot get people that cannot spell the word vote to participate in voting. Because voting means choosing a leader that is going to be in charge of, in case of Namibia, 3 million people of different cultures, of different races, of different religious backgrounds, of different disciplines, different tribes. They must make decisions. Did I mention different political party? That means you need one with an open mind that will not just focus on their tribe or their political party or their religion. You need someone who has an open mind to accommodate all these different people, because they are always going to be different. They are never going to be the same. You can try to make them the same, but then they will just say, well, cool the heck out of you. Well, cool, you're behind out of office. Now, the question of a company and a school that Lumumba is using brings us to straight to Socrates' concern. Socrates had a nuanced view of democracy, while he valued its ideals like freedom of speech and equal participation of all citizens. He also recognized some weaknesses in how it was practiced in Athens during his time. To a larger degree, it's still practiced the same. It's representative governance, you know. Everyone participates into voting the person that's going to lead them, in our case, for the next 5 years. Or if the term is extended, constitutionally allows you to only extend it once. That gives you 10 years. Now, specifically, Socrates worried that most citizens lacked the knowledge and wisdom to make informed public policy and governance decisions. This is why institutions like NID, Hensel Foundation, and you have a Legal Assistance Center, this is the reason why they exist. Ministry of Justice, throw them in that bucket. Ministry of Education, throw them in that bucket. This is why they exist. To sort of like try to fill this gap, because that's a giant gap. Which keeps bringing us to the same question. If you are strict in choosing a principal, you have to be strict in choosing a president. Otherwise, if you choose the right principal for a school and you choose the wrong president for your country, that president is going to make rules. That's going to make that principal's job difficult, even if they were that good of a principal. Here, I love technicalities. They never fail me. So therapeutic. Now, oh,
Eagle FM, huye more?
Huye more meniere, 100.
Hoot, 100.
Ungulo yuandi shi?
Where to go?
Moyokeni.
That's the only word, that's the only Oshuambo word that came to my head.
Ah, for you are missing a lot of cultural aspects.
When you are tiny and you don't have a lot of upper body strength to defend yourself from bullies, you get tired of running, so you just decide to keep hiding in libraries. And there are not a lot of things to do in libraries except reading.
Oh, my friend, you know what you used to do, ne?
Maybe I should thank those bullies. They really made me attend.
They give you some kind of courage and strength.
They also made me fit in spaces. I'm tiny. I was able to fit in most of them.
Those Indians and others.
Yeah.
Oh, my friend. I don't know. Any system I say is good.
Yeah.
Communism, democracy and things like that.
Yeah.
The only problem is ours.
Ourselves.
Maybe we work very well on these things of Bobo. So it gives us problems. See, when you look at, you always talk about this comedian. Sometimes we get lost.
Yeah.
In following, even this constitutionalism that you are talking about.
Yeah.
The separation of power. Just the main branch of the government, and you really touch them on well. Like, you know, David, from your good topic.
Thank you.
So these issues, people always think that, but I thank God for our constitutionalism. Even though sometimes we are busy, we might not understand it very well, but I just always think that, yes, the current dispensation is doing well, even though we have got so many rooms to improve, to make it really benefiting all of us. But the main issue is, I hope there is no interference there. You know, sometimes most of our laws are codified.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not so sure whether the codification is really in tune with all this other Roman duchy law and all this common laws and other issues.
Yeah.
If they are not codified, maybe a lack of codification. I know when you look at the magistrate, advocates, and all these other things, they are also codified. But then, if there are issues that still need to be, maybe issues that are really separated, that might make our system not to work very well because of not codification, maybe that it's left for you guys to make sure that you modify those ones. But the ones that are codified and they are helping us to work very well, let's congratulate ourselves.
Yeah.
The ones that are not codified, I think there's still room for improvement, and I think it can be done as a matter of urgency so that we don't unnecessarily waste time, resources and things like that. Because I've heard many people talking about, yeah, this one is a commercial thing, this is not a criminal thing, and this has to be tried in a different way. So those other ones, are they not codified? The criminal cases and civil cases, how are we going to make sure that they are harmonized?
I think that's the struggle of every legislative drafter, to make sure that they write laws not really just copying and pasting what the way that democracy was practiced in ancient Greece, but also to write it in a way that it reflects modern society. Take for example we can't just copy everything there and then paste it here, because we are talking about BC time periods here. So I think that's why we have words like amendments because of that, because we know that it's not carved in stones. It needs constant updating to keep up with the times. If we were to draft all the Namibian legislations to just fit one time period, how are we, it would be very difficult for us to fit in things like, take for example, the emergence of AI and projects like the regulations of institutions like the Green Hydrogen Initiative, so green energy transition and all those things. So the word amendments, I think, is sort of like it's like an eraser to the pencil. That, because we know that at some point we're either going to make a mistake or we're going to have to make change from the old to the new.
Yeah, you are correct.
Yeah.
And I think these are some of the areas that we really need to do to work more, to strengthen them. So, because especially in this area, these emerging issues, but I'm sure they are also, they can also be dealt with. Without the bill, without the regulations, they can still be regulated through other legislation that are already crafted. And if you feel that, yes, fine, this one does not have a room in here, because many a time people say, for example, cybercrime,
mm-hmm.
even if you do not have a registration on that area, but we can still have our children protected. There are some measures that can be borrowed from other existing legislation that can be able to protect, say, for example, our children, like I mentioned. Or if there is no law at all, mm-hmm. is there really law that is specifically or explicitly targeting those areas? If it's not there at all, then we might have a problem. But if there are laws that we can borrow from there to protect those vulnerable, maybe say cybercrime, even if you do not have a law, should we just fold our hands and have our people exposed or to crime and not protected, without borrowing from other legislation? I don't think that could be right. So, is there a mean? And the other one that you mentioned, I know they might be just using things blindly, but I'm sure there might be some kind of, even there are blind spots, but there might be some measures somewhere that we can borrow to legislate, to without amending that thing. Of course, the amending can be in the process or repeating those other ones. Is there no other restriction that we can make use of to make sure that our people are protected, whether it comes into democracy or communism and things like that? Those systems, we can merge them, because they have some elements that are similar to that other one.
Yeah.
Democracy, even when you look at the way it came into existence, let's say from the biblical or religious time, but there are also, I remember very well of the issue of Moses, where he was told by the father-in-law, say, why are you making people to suffer like this? Why? But they knew that there are also some legislation or provision, statutory provision, that are there to work. But why are you making people to suffer like this in the land? Do you think you are the only leader? So can't you appoint some able men to do to deal with these issues? And say, yes, let me select some those ones from the section, the platoons, and all the things that are also able to assist your leadership. So democracy came long time ago. The only problem, like you said, is because of us who abuse those instruments.
Yeah.
But they have been there. So how do we do to make sure that, yes, nobody should abuse those things? In your legal ethics, you know very well that, yes, the client must be protected. The interest of the client must come first. That will also protect the public image.
But clients can get on your nerves. Yo,
Let those who know the comedian, the Gabriel and others to come in.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. One advice you are given is, one of the advice you are given in the legal line of work is that your client, your client will be your worst enemy. Because there is nothing that's more irritating, I'm pretty sure, for a for a practicing lawyer, than being given half-cooked information, like the worst situation you can ever be. If not the worst situation you can ever be as a lawyer defending someone, is you to find out some information about that argument, about the argument you are making from the opposition. Because you don't have any defense. You did not prepare any defense for it. You really have to improvise and then maybe just ask for a recess and then murder your client after, like, why the heck didn't you give, when you give me all the information, no matter how diabolical it is, just give me the information so I can know how to counter it when it's brought up. But if you give me half of it and it's brought up as a surprise, hey. But clients do that all the time, which is, you just have no idea, you have no idea how much your lawyer wants to shoot you in the head when you do that. Don't get me wrong, I got paid. Even if you go to jail, I was, still enjoy my money and keep on. But boy, that's not a very good situation to be in. So, quick break, and we'll continue with democracy on the other side. The Time Machine with Helmut on Eagle FM, the Eye of an Eagle.
Lipura nengeno wapungwa eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku tite opoye ekukulile. Oshafafana nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshuala. Onongeshe faa ya pumbo kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi nawa. Nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe faa omarudi dayo loka. Opone ushe indife nawa nukumona oijamwiri nawa. Ninge pata fanona Monica ko Eagle FM. Onora etatuimwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ileko berewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu watatu oma filane Eagle FM the eye.
Welcome back. So we continue. See, for Plato, his point of view on the subject is this. If a person is to give good advice on the highest affairs of state, he or she must have expertise in justice, which is part of virtue and self-knowledge. The person who rushes into politics without having found self-knowledge falls into error and makes himself and everyone else miserable. He who is not wise cannot be happy. This is ancient Greece, people. This is ancient Greece. And it's better for such a person to be commanded by superior or wisdom. Now, why did we have to go back to Plato from Socrates? It's because he makes one point there that I actually don't agree with. That for someone, actually, I 50% agree with and 50% disagree with. That, let's only allow people that are qualified on political and judicial matters to give advice on political and judicial matters.
Yes, 50% true. But you know why I'm somewhat content with the system that we have, you know, as we have it today? Is because some of the biggest backstabbers in the governance world are those ones that are academically qualified, really qualified guys. In the tuna bond scandal in Mozambique, one of the primary suspects was their minister of finance, who had an advanced degree, I believe, in economics. Was he qualified? Absolutely. Did he lead the country to financial prosperity? Absolutely not. He led his family and his homies to financial prosperity, but not the country. But the role he was supposed to play was to run the country and lead it towards economic prosperity. He led the country down an economic ruin, because when 2016, when the whole thing went kaboom, not only did they find out that they now have to service a $2-something billion debt, but they also have to, they also lost, I think, about 50-60% of their economic value, national economic value, because of capital flight. A lot of investors were like, you know what, I'm not putting my money in a country that's drowning in debt, you know, already, and then just pile it up with $2-something billion. Was he qualified? Absolutely. And also, the guy has a Chinese name, which I'm still laughing to this day. And when you look at it from Namibia, for example, one of the fish rod suspects was a former attorney general and former justice minister, a qualified and very smart legal guy. Did he run the country in golden era? It's still being debated in court, innocent until proven guilty. But the documentary from Al Jazeera is saying, actually, no, he didn't. He didn't. Nope, he didn't. So, again, qualified or not, yes, you need qualified people to run institutions. But the thing is, qualified people are actually the best at looting. And I'm using the word looting because, well, Lumumba, Professor Lumumba is the one who said, what's going on in Africa is not corruption. No, there's corruption everywhere else. What's going on in Africa is not corruption, because of its lack of intelligence. This is looting on an industrial scale. And if you look at what's going on in South Africa with this whole Makhandla Commission, one thing that revealed with the Tembisa is $1-something or $2-something billion missing from one hospital is, it actually shows the sheer brutality of human greed. The sheer brutality that comes with that comes with protecting human greed. Like I say, witnesses to that case were dropping like flies. This is not, before you start saying, oh no, it's just white people, this is not colonial South Africa. This is post-independence South Africa. It's black people doing it to black people. So, it's nothing to do with skin color. Now, I know skin color has been used for a very long time as an excuse to commit all this violence. And I've tried to use the establishment of Australia as a prison colony to show that it has always been about class. It has nothing to do with skin color. In the US, there's they call them lobbyists. Now, the word lobbying is the word for bribe here. It's legal there. It turns out it's illegal here. Now, the thing is, one of the most famous lobbies is the American Israeli something committee, AIPAC, they call it. It's one of the very strongest lobbies, and they're very good at, publicly admit that they are very good at financially backing up leaders, and they have, 80, 90, 100% success rate. Translation, when they want to ruin your career, they will just take their money, which would give you that elevation, and then give it to someone who is running against you, which is not illegal. It's their money. They're allowed to give it to whoever they choose. Except what they've been doing for a very long time, which is now pissing off a lot of American citizens, is that they often back up a lot of politicians who are pro, pro-Israeli benefits more than American benefits. Now, what happens is representatives that keeps being backed up by these gazillions of dollars finds themselves in Congress. We call it Parliament here. Finds themselves in Congress, and then they start advocating for laws that are pro-Israel more compared to what? Compared to pro-American, American benefits, American interest. What then happens is that, more often it's, you see aid packages flying out of the U.S. towards Israel. And then that money is rechanneled back, back from Israel from Israel to politicians. Lobbying organizations, which then goes to politicians, and then those politicians advocates for the same law, and you have this, revolving door money, laundromat, if you can call it that. Now, what you begin to see then is that, the dumbest thing is that, these politicians are being bought with their own money. Because when they go in Congress to advocate for this money to be donated, that's American taxpayers' money. And when that money is given back as kickbacks, again, it's your money! And these guys are not dumb. A lot of them have advanced degrees in law. Obama being one of them. The way that I was excited when that guy came to office, it turns out, nah. That's before I learned that there are these people called campaign contributors. Campaign contributors. Contributors, really? Campaign funders. They fund. They don't contribute. No one contributes millions of dollars without expecting anything in return. Ask every straight guy. I'll tell you. The thing is about, guys, I'm going to have to snitch on us here. The thing is, ladies, you keep falling for it. Oh, let's go on a date. I just want to look at you every day. Nah, you just want to get laid. I'm not invited to this year's men's conference, am I? 16 past the hour of 9. The time machine with Helmut. Moving on. The thing is, the flaw here in democracy is that don't get unqualified people that don't know anything about policy, parliamentary or affairs, affairs of parliament to vote leaders. But here's the thing. The qualified ones are just equally disappointing. Bottom line is human nature. And then you take it to when you bring that whole money circle, that's taking place in American politics. When you bring it in South African Mkhandla Commission or more like a Tembisa Hospital story, you see that it's the exact same thing. You have, you have a group of about 200 shell companies. These are companies that only exist in paper. They're just on paper. They're like eSIM cards. Except eSIM cards, serve their purpose. So do shell companies, by the way. You can use them to steal a lot of money. I swear, the things that politics have taught me, y'all better laugh at my jokes now, because if I become a politician, even I'm beginning to be concerned that I know too much. I know too much. Too much. But anyway. Now, when you compare that money cycle, in the US, let's compare it like this. In the US, you have lobbyists like AIPAC that takes money and then give it to, use it to fund politicians, that are in line with their interest. And their interests are more often pro-Israel interests. And those politicians then find themselves in Congress, aka the American Parliament, to then make laws that even cement or more like increase the, you know, the chances of, increase the advantages of, them reaping more of those interests. Now, most of which comes in form of campaign contributions, not campaign contribution, but financial donations, like in billions to Israel. So that money goes to Israel, and then Israel uses some of that money to fund AIPAC, the organization that does the lobbying. The organization that does the lobbying takes some of that money, which came from the taxpayer, some taxpayers, you know, taxpayers, including those politicians. They take some of that money and then give it to politicians. They go to, those politicians go to parliament, lobby for laws that ask for even more donation. Donation is sent to Israel. Israel takes some of that money, give it to AIPAC, and you have this cycle going on. You can look at that and say, Israel, America, I mean, that's diabolical. If you ask me, that's the exact, those politicians are just as dumb as the thugs in South Africa. Okay, as a politician being dumb and a thug being dumb are two different things. Because the occupational hazard of being a thug is getting short. So that means as a thug, yeah, even a politician is an excuse to be dumb. As a thug, you can't be dumb. You're going to get killed. Like literally. So now, if you look at it, 2021, a financial, a lady from financial, from finance department at Tembisa Hospital discovers a group of about 200 companies, siphoning about 800 million out of Tembisa Hospital. So she decides to flag this, these payments, and then, reports them to her superior. You can imagine how scared she was, because if someone wants to steal storms into your house, you have thugs in winter that storm into houses with pangas to steal a TV. They are there with a panga to steal a TV. That means they are willing to kill you to get that TV or to get those jewelries or that little, $20,000, $40,000 you have in your safe. They are willing to kill you to get that. Now, what do you think someone who is planning on stealing 800 million is willing to do? Even worse, which is exactly what they did. It was that in August, in November of 2021. They gunned her down after dropping down her child, her child at school. She told her superior, and she had the right to be concerned about her life. She had every right to fear for her life, because if someone is willing to steal 800 million from a hospital that is poorly equipped, both with equipment and human resources, and as a result, people are literally dying so he can drive Lamborghinis. You don't have a moral discussion with someone like that. They have already made their decisions that the end justifies the means. So she was gunned down. And now, let's just leave all those big guys. Let's focus on those poor guys. The little guys that basically, because it's just a group of thugs that are, contracted by the guys, the big guys. They just found a bunch of thugs, gave them money, go and kill that person. And so they just went, they executed that task. And now they're answering in prison. They're rotting in prison. Here's the thing. The money that, what they didn't know was that the money that was given to them to go and take someone's life was their own money. Because this was the money, Tembisa Hospital is a public hospital. That means it's funded by taxpayers' money. That means it was taxpayers' money that was being stolen. And then those thieves used some of that money to give those thugs that went to take a life of that poor lady. So, like, if you look at the circle of mental poverty going on here, it's mind-numbingly stupid. It's on a whole another level stupid. For a break, we continue on the other side. So, if you ask me, again, one flaw in democracy, one flaw, is trusting voters to know what the job description of a president or a counselor, who don't know what the job description of a counselor or a president is, to participate in voting. Like, What are their votes based on? We go to the same church. We are from the same tribe. I met that guy, in town one day. He gave me $100. Again, you are looking at a country, different tribes, different races, different religions, different, okay, genders, fine. Different everything. So you now need someone in office that will not say, you know what, you are from my tribe, therefore I will favor you more than that one. Or we go to the same church, therefore I will favor you more than that one. Or we are from the same race, therefore I will favor you more than that one. Want someone who will do their level best. George Carlin makes it much more interesting when he said that, you know, when people complain about politicians, they forget that those politicians are coming from which society? The very same society that's complaining. They were birthed and raised by that same society. But quick break.
Lipura nengeno wapungwa eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweko tete opoye ekukurile. Oshafafa na nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwana. Onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi nawa. Mune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshefa omarude dayo loka. Opone ushendife nawa nokumona oijamo ili nawa. Ninge kwa tafanona Monica ko Eagle FM. Onore tatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ile ko berewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu batatu o mafelane Eagle FM. The eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have a capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any of its staff.
Thank you very much. Now, moving on. The democracy part of things. Qualified, not enough. For those of you that have been on platforms like Reddit, then you find one very interesting observation in terms of in the world of geopolitics taking place there. It's not something that is researched and proven, but it's a very interesting observation that you can easily spot with your eyes. That in a lot of Western countries. The people that are dominating the, central government structure are engineers. In other words, they specialized in disciplines that are practical, more practical than they are theoretical. That's why that's the reason why you see a lot of infrastructure development that is difficult to compete with taking place in Asia than you see in a lot of Western world, because there are a lot of first of all, we are dealing with bureaucracy when it comes to now in the Western world. Before we get to the bureaucracy part of things, when you look in the Western world and countries that have under a very high political and economic influence, political and economic influence, one thing that you see is that a lot of people that are in central government leadership positions most of them are lawyers or political scientists, psychologists. You have a lot of experts in positions of power that majored in disciplines that are more theoretical than they are practical in the Western world and countries that have Western political influence and economical influence. But when you look in the eastern part of the planet, what you see, especially eastern in relative to especially where we are, northeastern, well, basically for us, countries like for countries like China, you see that a lot of people are in engineering. Now, they all have their pros and cons. Things like, now this is all from Reddit, so take that with a pinch of salt. So, one gentleman then points out that, the problem about having, people in leadership position that specialized in, in fields that are more theoretical than they are practical is that there is more talking than implementation. I will create employment. How, Baba? You don't even own a tuck shop. We will process everything at home. Well, you know, I've come to learn that economic independence is more difficult to achieve than political independence is difficult, but economic independence is even more difficult. I have a Nigerian example on the other side of the break.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person who doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Lipura nengelo wapubwa Eva Tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku tite opoye ekukurile. Oshafafa na nongeshefa ili mehola mo ihewetike kovano ile koshuala. Konongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka. Okupitira oipindi konu konda doi inawa. Nune uto otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshefa omarudi tayo loka. Opone ushendi finawa nukumona oijago ili nawa. Ninge kwata fanona Monica ko Eagle FM. Onora etatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ile kongerewa mura hetatu natu bali o hetatu watatu o mafilane Eagle FM the eye.
And welcome back. From 2015, from 2015 to 2019, one very interesting gentleman served as a minister of, as an agriculture minister in Nigeria. A gentleman by the name of Audu Obe. And he said something about Nigeria's economic system, especially as it relates to import and export and the prioritization of local products over the imported ones, and the impact that mass import is causing, especially and how it's contributing to the stagnation of Nigeria's economic prospects. He said the following.
You bring in a shipload of rice, you also bring in a shipload of unemployment, because you are transferring your wealth to sustain other economies. Somehow, Nigerians didn't notice it. So we became a nation of importers. Toothpicks. Each year it cost us $18 million. Importing toothpicks. Tomato paste, $400 million. You talked about tomatoes now. One basket in town now is less than 2,000 naira. The farmers are losing money because the processors don't have enough funds to set up factories. You are going to do tomato paste, it's food grade stainless steel. You can't just use anything because you'll be putting poison in people's stomachs. Two factories have started off. I believe by the middle of next year, we can comfortably tell importers of tomato paste to stop.
And this is 6 years ago. So, just this is 6 years ago.
But when you do, you make enemies.
That's that part where he says, when you do, you make enemies. That's a part that I'm so glad I'm a comedian so I can point it out, because he is the first politician I've ever had. He's one of the few politicians I've had trying to address that problem. But I'll explain on the other side. God knows I love my job.
Even the rice we're trying to reduce, we have enemies. Heavy enemies. People who can kill if they have a chance. Because you're spoiling their business. And let nobody take it lightly. These guys have seized this country's economy. They've taken us hostage. And they have no intention of giving up.
The fact that that was happening in Parliament, I believe, coming from a minister in an economy like Nigeria, made me go like, okay. This is why I keep going over and over about how politics work in a lot, in a grand scheme of things. Politicians don't have money to run for office. They need campaign contributors. Campaign contributors come in with their own, end game. I mean, it's their money that they're investing in you. So you will have to take care of their interest. So when he said, when we start processing things at home, we make enemies. Oh, that is true. Anyone that is supplying you products now, you are their market. If you want to see just how nice those people are, just tell them, we have produced our, we have now reached a level where we can produce our own stuff. Please, we don't want your goods anymore. What do you think? Now, even if it was you as a businessman, how do you feel? If you woke up one day and the place where you sold your, the place where you sold your market, the market where you sold your stuff, they're telling you that, please find a different market for your products. We don't want it anymore because we have now achieved our own economic independence. Fact that that came from Parliament. Now, back in 2021, the then Ghanaian president found himself in Switzerland, where he sat with Swiss government representatives, and Swiss practice something called direct democracy. They have a whole different way of running the country. Yeah, I could have said he met the president. No, they have a whole different way of doing things there. So, President Nana Akufo-Addo meets with a government, Swiss government representatives, and one of the things he pointed out was, we want to add value addition to our cocoa at home because Ghana and Ivory Coast are the biggest suppliers of the chocolate market with cocoa beans. One thing he pointed out was that we would like to start processing cocoa at home to add value addition at home to grow our own economy. So, that's something that he pointed out. I'm telling you, those guys did not like any bit of it. There was one lady who gave off a face that was too obvious. She was terrible at hiding it. Now, if you ask yourself, what do politicians have to do with chocolate? Well, because isn't Nestle Swiss? Now, Nestle contributes, I'm pretty sure, significantly. I mean, it's a multinational company. It contributes significantly to the Swiss economy. So that economy is making a lot of people happy and making those politicians look good. It means everything, if something goes wrong with that economy, the people are going to hate politicians. And those politicians, well, who wants to be hated anyway? No one. At least I know I don't.
But I can, nah. Hating is just a waste of time. So one of my favorite quote on hate is that hating someone for doing something bad to you is like you drinking poison and expecting them to die. Like, I mean, because that anger and hate is just going to chew you. Not them, you. They'll just be there having a good life. You, on the other hand, will be losing sleep over it. As I just say, you know, nothing a couple of savannas can solve. Believe me, talking from experience. I love Namibura. Hey! These guys. You guys have a lot of influence, especially during the festive season. See your life. So, we make enemies when we start processing things at home. And you better believe. Look, BlackRock is a very rich company. But BlackRock is like a bank. A bank doesn't have its own money. It has clients' money, different companies and different individuals. That's the money banks have. Remove that money, all banks would crumble. During the festive season, in Germany, in one of the local banks, the people woke up one morning with a giant hole in the wall. And that's one giant hole. I swear, I don't know what they used to drill that hole with. Because I think it looks like I literally walked through it. And a lot of people lost, over 50 something euros were stolen. And as you can imagine, a lot of clients were not happy. That poor bank was now facing one of every bank. I don't care how big that bank is. Every bank's worst nightmare is what they call a bank run, where they just wake up one morning and they have queues of their clients lined up, all demanding their money back. Because the truth is, banks don't have that money. They're not keeping it lying around. That's not how banks work. They invest it so it can accrue more profit, so that when you come for your principal amount, they will give you that money. Maybe with a little bit of interest. So the moment you put that money in there, take for example $500,000 for, you know, a fixed deposit for 5 years, the bank is not going to find a special place to lock that money up. Again, that's not how money works. Are you familiar with the thing called inflation? Because, well, that money is as good as inflated if they did that. So it's not a bad thing that they invest the money. It's actually a good thing that they do invest money. The bottom line is they don't have it lying around. So that bank is now facing that bank run problem. I don't know how they're going to solve it, but there you go. The thing about having an educated community is that you end up with educated thieves who can drill through a wall at a bank. Again, let me repeat that, but a wall of a bank. You know what that translates into? Reinforced concrete. Yeah. That's interesting. That's very interesting. So, the way that this political thing works is that private institutions have a lot of money and they have a lot of interest. There are a lot of ventures they want to go into, and sometimes they need but the thing is we are governed by laws, and these laws are regulating every exit and entrance of any institution into any venture. So donating money into politics is very reasonable if you are after a specific interest, someone to go in parliament and advocate for laws that are in line with your interest. That's how politics works. That's how it has always worked, even during when dinosaurs were roaming the planet. But let's just finish that now, shall we?
A very sweet market, and they have taken control. This regime is unpopular in part because It is trying to cut down imports and transfer the wealth to our rural people. I'm saying it because I've been in this business for 41 years and I can tell you some history. Abdullahi Adamu is here. Import milk, sugar, toothpicks, toothpaste, handkerchiefs, pencils. We don't make. To cure Nigerians of that malady will take a while. Finally, importation. That's where we are. Vegetables, lettuce, cabbage comes from South America through Dubai and arrives here for sale. Vegetables. But there are also Nigerians who would rather have the imported item. If it is not imported, it is not right. It shows status. It shows, you know, a class that they only eat imported this, imported that. And when you touch these things, the furor is as terrible as the fire of hell. They are angry with you. Why are you interfering with what they are used to? Do you know, sir, there are Nigerians who use their cell phones to import pizza from London? Buy in London, they bring it on British Airways in the morning to pick up at the airport. Pizza. As ridiculous as it is.
Import. It's not rocket science. Everyone that has a market don't want to lose it. Now, one of our biggest market for meat is the EU. Especially the Norwegians are very good at eating our meat. Now, imagine if you woke up one day and got a call from the Norwegians that, thank you very much, Namibia, for providing us meat. High quality, fed meat. Excellent. But from now moving forward, we are not going to buy your meat anymore. We are now independent. We have started doing our own farming. We have now, started doing our own animal husbandry here at home. So we just have our own meat. Be honest here. Would we like that? Because I know very well we wouldn't. Now, what makes you think Apple would want you to make your own phone? What makes you think Samsung would be thrilled to see you make your own phone? Absolutely not. Because if you make yours, they lose that market. You know what that translates to? Billions for the African continent. And the shareholders don't like their dividends disturbed. Shareholders don't like that. They don't like their dividends disturbed. If you want to better understand this, look at it not from a politician perspective, not from a CEO perspective, look at it from a shareholder perspective. Shareholders wield all the power. A CEO, he has the power to tell you when to submit your task. A politician, he has the power to stand up with a mic and then lie to you with a straight face. How they do that is beyond me. Actually fascinating. Very fascinating. Very fascinating. Now, here's the thing though. In terms of governance, especially in relations to democracy, there are a lot of arguments that can be made about voters not being qualified enough to know what a president does or how to pick the right candidate without letting the shadows of tribalism and racism and religious affiliation, maybe football team affiliation, cloud their judgment. Yes, there are those chances. So then you need to educate people so they can make a rational decision. Rational, very subjective. Very subjective. Very subjective, that word. Because it's, there is no one size fits all. By the way, when I talked about Idi Amin, did I mention he was Adolf Hitler's huge fan? He was a huge fan of Adolf Hitler. That explains a lot. But the whole thing about him eating human flesh, some reason I have a problem buying that. Knowing how smear campaigns work in politics now,
I didn't know that back then when I watched the movie. I think I was in high school when I watched the movie about Idi Amin. Plus, it's a movie. Every time I read a book and watch a movie that's based on that book, the same for the Titanic, 50 Shades of Grey, Harry Potter's, Game of Thrones, and I don't recommend that. I didn't even finish one because, it's like the series, but very, 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 very graphic. So, on the, on the different leaders specializing in different disciplines in different parts of the world, East versus West. One thing I've come, I come to conclude. Read it. Here's the thing. It's pointed out that the good thing about having leaders in positions of power, leaders that study disciplines that are more practical than they are theoretical, is that you see a lot of implementation in terms of decisions. The decision is discussed today, it's implemented today or the next day. But the disadvantage is that these are more often engineers. They know machines very well, but they don't know people very well. They are not people. I don't say they are not people's person because, 1.4 billion people, are you kidding me? So what you end up having now is you end up seeing people coming up with laws like the one child policy because they start, thinking about humans in the very same way that they think about machines. The human element becomes somewhat a little questionable. Even though that point of view is somewhat debatable because, have you seen the Western world where people now, specialized in disciplines that are more theoretical than they are practical? Their people's skills are terrible, terrible. Oh, they're very good at lying. Public relations, top notch. That's why, there's a book titled Propaganda, literally coming out of the Western world. And it points to the psychological, to the presence of psychology in both marketing and politics. It's all the same thing. Women were convinced that smoking was a brilliant idea, was an excellent way. Smoking with cigarettes they bought with their own money was an excellent way of protesting against a patriarchal society. And a lot of them got cancer. And then they turned around and said, oh, they lied to us. Yeah, they did. So they can make money. Philip Morris, under its brand Marlboro, in the 1998-99-2000, Czech Republic. Have you read that research? It's actually one of my favorite. About human greed. Philip Morris, one of the biggest cigarette manufacturers, wanted to expand into Czech Republic. So they found an excellent Ministry of Health that's very, 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 very strict about, they found a government that told them, no, we're not going to get our people addicted to smoking. Are you kidding? Because if they are all addicted to smoking, they have a lot of health issues that are associated with smoking. So that's a blow to our workforce. And Philip Morris was like, actually, I can convince you otherwise. The Czech government was like, okay, fine, convince me otherwise. Philip Morris was like, challenge accepted. They commissioned a study. You can imagine how fair this study was. And that study brought out a result that looked at the number of people, some of the advantages of introducing smoking into Czech Republic on an industrial scale. So they argued for the implementation, for the creation of that market. They argued that, Actually, there are a lot of advantages. Yes, there are disadvantages that comes with that. Disadvantages being that your workforce is going to be impacted. But look on the bright side. Now that I'm talking about smoking and talking bright side, there's a lot of pun in there, and it is all intended. Moving on. They came with an argument that actually it will save you a lot of money. First of all, a lot of people will die sooner, and therefore you won't have to pay to spend a lot of your money taking care of the elderly and paying out pensions. And now, that will save you a lot of money. And you know what's my favorite part? That research was based on the 1998-1999 or 1999-2000 Czech Republic's Ministry of Health statistics. I told them, look, this is how much you have spent just last year. This is how much you spend on pension. You know, if they were all smokers, they would have died by now. You wouldn't have to deal with that. Like, well, duh. And if you implement this, they will all be dying sooner. And where the sooner they die, the more cost they save you in pension and also, you know, in medical expenses. And the medical expenses are going to go high because, well, if someone has cancer, that's bad. That's not good news. That's bad. And you don't ask for it. Well, unfortunately, we live on a planet that we have, that everything that is not you wants to kill you. Sometimes you can eat all the wrong thing, all the right things and exercise and all that and find out that you have one of these terminal conditions. So Mother Nature is brutal, really brutal. Let's take a break, 6 minutes to the hour of 10. Let's take a break and then we'll sign off on the other side and hand it over to Wolfram Sinengela. This is the Time Machine with Helmut on it. You know, that Philip Morris research in Czech Republic, that research showed me one thing. That report was leaked. The Prime Minister tried to deny it. Philip Morris had to file a formal apology to the people of Czech Republic. That's very corporate thinking. That's not something that's new. That's very corporate thinking. Anything to increase shareholder dividends. Anything. And when I say anything, my dear Lord, do I mean anything? Because if you are using the sooner they die, the more pension money they're going to save you as an excuse to create a market. Then that gentleman, the former Nigerian agriculture minister, was right. The people that have your market are not going to inspire you to develop products they are already selling you. That would be defeating the process. It's like us training Nigeria to make their own salt. Who are we going to sell ours to? It's not that they don't know. I'm pretty sure they know. I don't know how we reached that deal, but boy, oh boy. Looking at Nigeria's economic size. They know that, but how we reached that deal? You and me. There's a reason why buying things like electronics, for example, and you have all these import laws becoming very strict, which is why a couple of weeks ago, Namra had, the head of Namra, Sam Shivute, met with order with me guys. Although, boy, those guys were pissed. I think they are still pissed to this day. But Namra is becoming more strict by the day. Well, if you ask me, it's strict on purpose. Strict so that you can buy at home and support economies at home. You see, every company that's selling those products is saying, okay, now if the market is being flooded by this cheap stuff, how am I going to sell my stuff? And if I can sell, remember, I can pay taxes. And if I can pay my taxes, you are broke as a governmenty. Therefore, please raise the levies. Thank you very much. Now, if you're a government, what would you do? It's always put yourself in that shoe. What would you do? Don't lie to me. At least if you're going to lie, lie to yourself. What would you do? So, Idi Amin, who started off as a cook, And then Wendful decided, you know what, I want to fight. And then he went there to join the army. And his first order of action was to go and suppress his own people that were fighting for their freedom. I mean, Jean Bethel Bokassa's story was ridiculous, because this is the guy that ordered Mercedes Benz for his own coronation as a prince with a golden throne that was made in form of an eagle, and also every vibe of that coronation was giving Napoleon Bonaparte. Because he was a huge fan of Bonaparte. Oh, Jean Bethel Bokassa revered Napoleon Bonaparte. And Idi Amin revered Adolf Hitler. The people that inspire Africans, I swear, the people that inspire Africans. Huh? Okay, I don't think I'm gonna take my break, but that, ladies and gentlemen, brings us to the end of the time machine for the morning session. At least I really hope. From Monday next week, your chances are very high you're going to be back to Mike Oshoveli. Bravo, congratulations. And I have to decide if I have to do my afternoon show or go on vacation. Interesting. Yeah, I'll make that decision. Sometimes I'm very good at making decisions, but my bank account is stubborn, yo. I want to go on vacation. I mean, you can vacate out of this discussion, but vacation, as in holiday, yeah, forget about that. So until Sunday when today's Friday, yeah, today's Friday. We're going to talk again on, we're going to meet again on Sunday when I'm doing my usual Helmut Mind the Gap / DJ session here on Eagle FM. And Monday, just very, very high, we're back to the, I'm going to be on the afternoon program. And you have to understand that this is this schedule is going to be, we're still in the holiday season. We're still in the holiday, so this schedule is going to be somewhat flexible. Until the 9th of, until the 9th, that's next week, Friday, until the 9th of, the 9th of January. And, everything will revert back to the usual home run 4:30, type of schedule. And maybe with a few changes only from the 12th of January. Thank you for tuning in and thank you for listening. Hope you enjoyed and have a good weekend.